In September 1859, scientists observed the first confirmed powerful solar flare. The sun threw a large amount of radiation, energy, and plasma material into space. This was a massive and devastating disaster, but it happened 93 million miles away, so it probably wasn't such a big problem, right? Well, actually it was. A few hours after the flare was spotted, telegraph lines stopped working all over Europe and North America. Some of them sparked and caused fires. People realized that the sun was not only the source of light and warmth, but also danger. Scientists called that day the Carrington effect. The good news is that this happened in the middle of the 19th century and didn't cause serious problems for the planet. The bad news is that scientists are warning that in 2025, Earth will experience even more powerful solar storms caused by a coronal mass ejection. This is a giant cloud of plasma or charged gas. At one time, the sun can throw billions of tons of this material into space. Then, all this flies at high speed through space. Some of the material can reach our planet in 15 hours, the rest in a few days. During the journey, it captures and accelerates any charged particles encountered along the way, which increases its intensity and power. And then, this unstoppable array of energy crashes into our planet. It heats the upper layers of the atmosphere, increases its thickness, and disturbs the work of satellites. They slow down and lose altitude. Communication with satellites becomes unstable, GPS is buggy, data is poorly transmitted. Also, solar charged gas penetrates into our power grids, transformer booths, and stations. It leads to massive failures that ruin the work of the entire technological chain. A powerful solar attack on several power plants can trigger a power outage in a large city. The internet, phones, social services, networks, nothing will work. We may lose connection with each other. Many large companies will go bankrupt, and the planet may face economic crises. These are big problems, but not the most serious ones. Electric plants serve boiler houses and water pumping stations. Solar storms could stop water from getting to our homes. You wouldn't be able to buy groceries in stores without cash. Of course, we can restore all this, but we'll have to live in the Iron Age for a while. But the worst thing is that a prolonged solar storm can suspend food production. For example, this year, a geomagnetic storm caused by solar storms shut down GPS satellites that are connected with modern tractors, so farmers couldn't work. What would happen if such storms happened every day for a year? We would probably start missing many items in supermarkets. Besides, maritime navigation also depends on satellites. Thanks to them, ships calculate the latitude and longitude of their location. If the satellites are damaged, ships may get lost in the ocean. Even whales get lost in the ocean during magnetic storms. Many birds navigate with the help of magnetic field during long flights to the south. So, not only people, but also animals may experience serious problems. Solar storms heat the upper layers of the Earth's atmosphere and thus make the air thicker. The movement of satellites slows down because of this air resistance. They lose altitude, and one of these satellites is Hubble. Yes, the very telescope that provides us with incredible pictures of space. Scientists say that it will fail much earlier because of solar attacks. You've probably heard on the news that solar activity has recently caused electromagnetic storms on Earth. But fortunately, it hasn't affected our lives in any way. The only problem was headaches, high pressure, and mood swings during those storms. It seems like an ordinary thing, but scientists don't have a consensus on this topic. No one has proven exactly how and why magnetic storms affect our condition. Yes, during storms, the planet's atmosphere becomes less dense, and perhaps this affects our blood pressure, like it happens when the weather changes. So people with cardiovascular system problems should be careful. But the effect on our nervous system, fortunately, is quite insignificant. It's possible that when people hear about a coming magnetic storm and feel unwell, they experience a placebo effect. But there's also good news. All these charged solar particles interact with atoms and molecules in Earth's atmosphere. This interaction leads to beautiful northern lights. It's good to spend some time away from your gadgets and look up at the sky sometimes. One of the biggest storms occurred on March 13, 1989. On March 10th, the sun ejected a gigantic volume of coronal plasma. The amount of that material was the size of 36 Earths. The solar cloud was flying to us at 1,000,000 miles per hour. And a couple of days later, it crashed into our planet's magnetic field. The collision caused a geomagnetic superstorm. People watched some of the brightest and most beautiful auroras in history. The light show covered most of the planet, but after a beautiful performance, problems followed. The solar storm was so powerful that it went through the atmosphere and reached Earth's surface. First, it disrupted the operation of satellites and then damaged electrical networks. For example, it destroyed a transformer at a nuclear power plant in New Jersey. Energy companies in Canada went down because of systems overloading. As a result, about 6 million people in northeastern Canada lost electricity for 9 hours. This was the largest power outage caused by a geomagnetic storm. Yeah, there were more powerful storms in the mid-19th and early 20th centuries, but the planet wasn't covered by so many power grids at that time. More powerful storms may occur in 2025. The question is, will we be ready for them? Careful study of solar activity can help us prepare. If we know in advance about an upcoming storm, then scientists can switch off some systems and turn them on afterward, theoretically. If the activity of the sun increases every year, then we'll have to come up with new, innovative ways to protect ourselves. Who knows? Maybe scientists will cover all our electrical appliances and stations with a layer of special protective material. Anyway, we must do everything possible not to harm Earth's magnetic field. Because if this shield disappears, the surface of our planet will resemble that of Mars. But what causes these solar storms, and why do they affect us so much? Okay, imagine a guy with a nice hairstyle who goes to bed. In the morning, his head is a complete mess. The magnetic fields of the sun are similar to this tousled hair. When the sun rotates, these fields burst, get tangled, stretch, and tear. At those moments, they release huge amounts of energy into space. This is not a problem for the sun, as the fields are restored during the process called magnetic reconnection. Such emissions can cause trouble for the planets in our system. When magnetic reconnection happens, several phenomena can follow. One of them you've already heard about. It's a coronal mass ejection. But there's another terrible thing that the sun does, and it's called solar flare. Imagine a bright burst of solar radiation containing electromagnetic waves, X-rays, radiation, and visible and ultraviolet light. During flares, the sun releases an enormous amount of this destructive energy, and it spreads through space at the speed of light. It takes 8 minutes for this explosive wave to reach our planet. Fortunately, we don't get much damage from these flares because Earth's magnetic field and atmosphere protect us. Strong flares can disrupt radio waves in the upper atmosphere and affect the operation of satellites, but it's nothing critical. Another solar phenomenon is called a radiation storm. These are accelerated electrons and protons that move at a speed slightly less than the speed of light. Thanks to Earth's magnetic field, radiation storms don't harm our planet too much, but they pose a danger to astronauts and satellites. These particles can penetrate human tissues and lead to serious health problems in the way radiation does, but only if you're in space or flying a plane in the upper atmosphere. So, what's going on with all the news about the sun? Some say that the sun is getting angry. Well, what does that mean exactly, and should we be concerned? Frankly, yes, we should be concerned. It's generally not a good thing to get too much sunshine. The ultraviolet component of sunlight is harmful to the skin. That's why humans have adapted a spectrum of skin pigmentation. The more sunlight there is to protect ourselves against, the more pigmentation we need. Big floppy hats and, of course, bottles of high SPF oil-free sunscreen help too, especially for fair-skinned people. But what is planet Earth going to do? First, let's get a good estimate of just how angry the sun is likely to get. The sun usually goes through an active-calm-active cycle every 22 years, with highs and lows occurring every 11 years. Why that happens, no one knows, it just does. There's probably a reason, but scientists haven't figured it out yet. They do know that, with each cycle, the sun reverses its magnetic poles. That in itself is pretty astounding, especially when you consider that Earth hasn't reversed its magnetic poles in the last 600,000 years. Lately, the sun has been extremely calm, the calmest it's been in over 100 years, in fact. That's unusual, too. The active calm-active cycle has turned into an active calm-calm cycle. But that's changing, and it's why we are notifying Brightsiders about what to expect in the coming few years. The terms calm or active or angry refer to the amount of high-energy radiation that the sun gives off. Thankfully, the amount of visible light the sun gives off doesn't change very much. That would be a serious problem. If the sun were to get just 6% dimmer or brighter, the Earth would either freeze or fry. Observing sunspots is the easiest way to measure how active the sun is. The more sunspots that are visible, the more active the sun is. A graph, known as the butterfly diagram, tracks the 11-year period of sunspot activity. The butterfly diagram shows how sunspots disappear regularly from the surface of the sun and reappear regularly in other locations. NASA predicted that the present cycle of solar activity would be calm, like the previous one. But it's starting to look like that is not the case. Presently, we are in solar cycle number 25. That's the 25th 11-year solar cycle since 1755, when record-keeping began. This cycle of solar activity is expected to peak in 2025. The sun has already exceeded the number of sunspots NASA had predicted. So, it doesn't look like this solar cycle is going to be a calm one. It looks like we are going to have some very active sun-blasting radiation on Earth for the next several years. In early February 2022, 40 out of 49 SpaceX communication satellites in orbit above the atmosphere were destroyed by an explosion on the sun. High-speed electromagnetic plasma gas from the sun, known as solar wind, caused the Earth's atmosphere to compress, and Elon Musk's satellites lost their orbital integrity and crashed back into Earth. Sunspots look like dark spots on the sun, but they aren't dark. They're just not as bright as the surface of the sun. To get a better idea, take a lit 25-watt light bulb and hold it in front of a lit 100-watt light bulb. The 25-watt light bulb will appear dark. That's the same way it is with sunspots. Sunspots on the surface of the sun almost always come in pairs. This is because sunspots are magnetic storms in the plasma gas of the sun. One sunspot will be magnetic positive, and the other sunspot will be magnetic negative. Between the two sunspots, which can be many times bigger than the Earth itself, there flows an electric current that carries a fiery arc of ionized gas with it. Solar flares are something else we should be concerned about. They are powerful electromagnetic explosions on the sun associated with sunspots. As the super-hot plasma gas on the sun churns and twists, it also twists the magnetic field lines in the sunspots. When these lines snap, a powerful explosion releases X-ray and gamma radiation at the speed of light. Visible gases are also released. Solar flares have a classification system according to how powerful they are. X-class solar flares are the most dangerous. This type of solar flare can cause radio blackouts across Earth and harm satellites, astronauts in orbit, and even passengers on high-altitude airplanes. M-class solar flares cause spectacular aurora at the North and South Pole areas on Earth, while C-class solar flares have almost no effect on Earth. But solar flares are not the biggest explosions on the sun. CME stands for coronal mass ejection, and these are much more massive than solar flares and more dangerous when they're headed our way. As the name indicates, coronal mass ejections are explosions that originate on the sun's corona. They hurl millions of tons of hot ionized gases outward from the corona. The word corona is derived from the Latin word for crown, and it's the layer of thin bright gas around the sun's surface. The corona of the sun is much hotter than the surface of the sun. The surface itself is about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But the corona is somewhere between 1 to 2 million degrees. The why and how the corona is so much hotter than the surface of the sun is another major mystery that scientists have yet to completely work out. A recent theory claims the corona is heated by sound waves and the sun's nuclear reactions make a lot of noise. Project GONG, which stands for Global Oscillation Networking Group, was set up on Earth to monitor the sound waves on the sun. Cool, huh? Turns out, the sun is ringing, or oscillating, like a bell. And we have 5 observation sites across the globe. One in India, Australia, one in the Canary Islands, one in Chile, and one in California, that keep a constant watch over the 10 million sound waves moving on and around the Sun. Now that the Sun is entering an active phase, we can expect to see more powerful CMEs heading our way. The gases expelled by the Sun are ionized and stripped of electrons by the intense heat. This causes them to form a proton storm that can travel through space at speeds of around 500 miles per second. These positively charged atomic nuclei will mostly be blocked or deflected by the magnetic field that extends around Earth. Our atmosphere is no help against a proton storm, although the last mile of air above the surface of the Earth stops the harmful X-rays from solar flares. The particle wind from the Sun can only be stopped by Earth's magnetosphere. We can look forward to some spectacular aurora around Earth's magnetic poles, and it's very possible that these aurora will extend down to the mid-latitudes when the Earth is moving through a coronal mass ejection. Currently, the United States has a space probe headed for the solar corona. Because the corona of the Sun extends outward for many millions of miles, the Parker Solar Probe, as it's called, is cruising 3.8 million miles from the surface of our star, or about one-tenth the distance to Mercury. The probe is experiencing temperatures of 2,400 degrees Fahrenheit, but it is also kept at perfect room temperature. A 4.5-inch thick carbon composite heat shield protects the telescopes and magnetometers in the probe that measure the intensity of the solar wind. The 5 antennae that protrude into the coronal gases are made of a niobium alloy, which can withstand the extreme temperatures of the corona. The recent double calm cycle of the Sun is a bit concerning when trying to predict how active the Sun will get this cycle. The sunspots completely disappeared for a long time from the entire surface of the Sun. It is as if the magnetic distortions we usually see on the photosphere of the Sun had collapsed into its interior. Intense magnetism is coming to the surface now and breaking through into the corona. The National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado, is predicting that this solar cycle, cycle number 25, will be one of the strongest ever. The last solar cycle was very calm, with a sunspot count of only 116. The average is 170. But the prediction for this cycle is between 210 and 260 sunspots, which would be one of the strongest cycles ever. We stand to lose more satellites to a stronger solar wind. We can also expect electric grid overloads as the proton storm peaks in 2025. That means we should expect an interruption to our internet services as positively charged protons get into the wires, run into the transformers, and overload them. On March 12, 1989, a powerful CME hit Earth and created absolute havoc with our power grids. Will we experience anything of this magnitude in the near future? Well, stay sharp, Brightsiders.
It was September 2nd, 1859. People all over Europe and North America woke up at night, confused and still tired. They were sure it was already morning. It was so bright outside. But when they looked out of their windows, they discovered it wasn't sunlight. The skies were lit by countless intense auroras, red, green, and purple. They were so brilliant, one could read a book as easily as in the afternoon. Auroras appeared even in the regions where they had never been witnessed before, like Cuba, the Bahamas, Jamaica, and Hawaii. Cool visual effects weren't the only thing that both mesmerized and horrified people. The most high-tech stuff at that time, telegraph wires, shorted out throughout Europe and the US. Sparks were flying from equipment, and many human operators got electric shocks. Papers and telegraph offices burst into flames. All the machines were immediately disconnected from their batteries, and still, they mysteriously kept sending broken messages. Fires, ignited by short circuits, spread over large areas. Colorful lights kept dancing overhead. All this caused panic and total confusion. Earth's inhabitants had never seen or experienced anything like that before. At that time, very few people knew that the Sun was to blame for the chaos. One of them was English astronomer Richard Carrington. At about 11 a.m. on September 1st, the man was standing by a telescope in his private observatory. He was watching sunspots on the surface of the Sun. Suddenly, two patches of intense white light broke out. They looked as bright as direct sunlight. At that moment, the astronomer didn't know what a terrible commotion these flares would cause. Later, it became clear that the sun had produced an epic geomagnetic storm and unleashed it at our planet's protective layer. Wave after wave of charged particles slammed into Earth's atmosphere. The planet's magnetic field wasn't powerful enough to stop them. It gave way, and the storm hit Earth, causing havoc. The phenomenon got the name of the Carrington event. So far, it's been the worst solar storm ever recorded. Good thing it happened when people didn't have advanced technologies and weren't that vulnerable to the sun's geomagnetic fury. The 1859 solar storm was three times more powerful than the one that happened on March 13, 1989. 3 days before it began, astronomers watched a massive eruption on the sun's surface. Within a couple of minutes, a billion-ton cloud of gas was hurled away from the star. It rushed straight toward our planet at a speed of millions of miles per hour. On Monday the 12th, the huge mass of solar plasma reached Earth's magnetic field. This storm was so fierce, it lit spectacular auroras and created underground electric currents beneath North America. These currents must have found some weaknesses in the power grid of Quebec, Canada. In less than 3 minutes, the entire city lost power. Millions of people found themselves in pitch-black streets, dark buildings, and stuck elevators. They woke up in freezing cold homes, unable to cook breakfast. The following 12-hour blackout closed businesses, airports, and schools. The Montreal Metro was also shut. In the U.S., hundreds of power grids started to have problems minutes after the storm hit Earth's surface. Luckily, none of these issues led to a blackout. The storm was severe enough to disrupt satellite communication systems and radio signals. Some space satellites tumbled out of control for a few hours. Lots of them had mysterious problems that went away as soon as the storm began to subside. No newspaper mentioned it, but in 2012, Earth had a close shave after narrowly missing an extreme solar storm, the most intense in the past 150 years. On July 23rd, astronomers at Space Weather Prediction Center in Colorado spotted two clouds of energetic particles. They erupted from the sun's surface and barreled into space. Just 19 hours later, these clouds zoomed past the spot our planet had just left. If the solar eruption had happened several days earlier, Earth would have ended up in the line of fire. So, what if a solar storm as powerful as the iconic Carrington event happened nowadays? How much more harm would it cause? Would our life get back on track after such a disaster? Before you learn the answers to these questions, let's figure out what a solar storm is. The sun is a gigantic, constantly changing ball of molten gases. Every once in a while, it spews out bursts of energy, solar flares. They often go hand in hand with something called coronal mass ejections. Those are giant bubbles of ionized gas that can speed up to more than 600 miles per second. The most powerful volcanic eruptions pale in comparison with solar flares that release 10 million times more energy. Within a few minutes, one solar flare can give out billions of tons of charged particles. Solar flares are also insanely hot, with the temperatures reaching several million degrees Fahrenheit. Astronomers believe that such bursts of solar radiation happen when the sun's magnetic field gets twisted in some regions. At one moment, all the pent-up energy is released. The star sends out light and particles, mostly electrons and protons. Most solar flares last for minutes, but some continue for hours. Scientists classify solar flares depending on how brightly they shine in X-rays. You aren't likely to notice the tiniest flares if you don't have special equipment. Medium solar flares lead to fleeting radio blackouts at the poles, but nothing too serious. It's X-class flares people should worry about. They cause the strongest and longest-lasting solar storms. When people think about danger coming from space, most of them imagine an approaching asteroid, like the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. But apparently, we should be much more worried about our good old sun. A super strong solar storm heading toward Earth won't happen at once. First, there will be high-energy sunlight, mostly ultraviolet rays and X-rays. They will ionize our planet's upper atmosphere and mess up radio communication. After that, a radiation storm will hit Earth. And finally, several days later, a colossal cloud of charged solar particles will reach our atmosphere. The particles will interact with the planet's magnetic field and wreak havoc all over the world. If an intense solar storm happened these days, it would start by disrupting GPS and knocking out satellites. If any astronauts were spacewalking at that moment, they would have a mere minutes after the first flash of light to find shelter. Their spacecraft would likely be properly shielded and safe enough. The main challenge would be to get inside in time. After that, the storm will proceed to interfere with satellite communications. That's why tons of your daily activities, from calling your friends to paying with your credit card, would be at risk. But one of the worst consequences would be connected with power grids. Power surges caused by the particles coming from the sun would damage giant transformers. Those take ages to replace, especially if hundreds or even thousands get wrecked. In some places, a failure of one power grid would make others collapse as well, creating a domino-like reaction. Picture living without electricity for a day, a month, a year. No light, no computers, no phones, water supply systems out of order, no food in supermarkets. Plus, without electricity, it would be next to impossible to reboot the already failed power grids. A powerful solar storm would cost people $1 trillion to $2 trillion, and that's just during the first year after it happens. It would take the world another 4 to 10 years to recover. The damage to all kinds of satellites alone would reach $70 billion. Under majestic auroras, people would have to get used to a new, dramatically different lifestyle. No doubt, we'd have some kind of warning. Modern equipment all over the world and in space doesn't stop watching the sun even for a second. Once a bad solar storm happens, people would have some time to prepare, between several hours and a couple of days. And if transformers are taken offline in time, the consequences won't be so dramatic. Now, the following news might sound scary. There are also super flares. In comparison to them, our sun's bursts of radiation are small potatoes. Super flares mostly occur in young and active stars. In 2016, astronomers saw such a phenomenon. A star 1,500 light-years away from Earth produced a flare that was 10 billion times more powerful than any of those that burst from our sun. It doesn't mean we're safe here on Earth. Even our middle-aged sun knows how to produce super flares. But while young stars can have them once a week or even more often, for the sun, it's once in a few thousand years. And still, if people don't figure out how to protect the planet, just one super flare can shred our ozone layer and wipe out life on Earth.
Electronic satellites suddenly go out of control. There are voltage surges across the globe. In some places, there's a complete blackout. Scientists have little data on this incredible solar behavior, so we're still unable to accurately predict how or when exactly the next geomagnetic storm will happen. One such event took place back in July 2012, but thankfully it missed us. Not by far, though, by a mere 9 days. Just to give you a glimpse of what nearly happened, I need to explain some astronomical basics. A solar storm is a series of effects we feel here on Earth after certain events occur on the Sun. Our star is nothing more than a huge ball of molten gases that are constantly moving around, so these events happen more often than you'd think. For a solar storm to begin, our Sun needs to emit bursts of energy. They're in the form of solar flares and coronal mass ejections. These two phenomena send electrical charges and waves of magnetic fields toward the Earth at an astonishing speed of about 3 million miles per hour. When these solar storms reach our planet, we can see northern lights display in locations close to the Arctic Circle. But they can also mess up satellites or other types of electronic communications. Some of these solar storms can be dangerous, and back in 2012, we came close to experiencing a very powerful one that could have had a serious outcome. The most powerful in as much as 150-plus years, based on research done by astronomers. But how did we manage to escape it? Did we have something to do with it, or was it just a pure coincidence? What we do know is that one of those coronal mass ejections did hit the Earth's orbit in late July 2012. Our planet had already left that specific location as it was on its scheduled trajectory around the Sun. So you might be asking yourself at this point, what if it didn't miss us? Turns out, these intense solar storms are dangerous to all sorts of technological objects. Given we are now literally surrounded by electric objects, from our phones to our cars, try to imagine what would happen if they all stopped working all of a sudden. And here's how they work. Solar storms start with an explosion, or a solar flare. Then, X-rays and UV radiation travel to our Earth at the speed of light. Some of the side effects? Well, they can include radio blackouts and GPS navigation errors. The effects can continue as minutes, or at times hours later, energetic particles reach our atmosphere. They move only a bit slower than the speed of light, but they can electrically shock the Earth's satellites and damage their components. Lastly, about a day later, clouds of magnetized plasma reach us as well. They can cause huge power blackouts, more or less paralyzing everything with an electrical plug. We might not even be able to flush our toilets, since most water supplies in cities use electric pumps these days. The effects of these geomagnetic storms would be different around the world, though. Solar storms are curious by themselves, but why do they affect some locations on Earth more than others? Based on recent research, geology has a lot to do with it. But I need to take you back a bit to paint you the bigger picture. Buckle up, because we're taking a trip in the time machine. To a time when the moon didn't even exist yet. 4.6 billion years ago, our solar system looked a lot different than it does now, and that's putting it lightly. Hundreds of new planets began to form around the new sun. Planets like our own Earth, Venus, or Mars were still hurtling around the cosmos. Back in the 1970s, an astronomer named Donald R. Davis developed a theory that said the moon was born when another planet hit a newly formed Earth about 4.5 billion years ago. He also indicated that it might have been the size of Mars and later named this planet Theia. It's difficult to imagine what that impact might have looked like, even with the equipment we have these days. The astronomer suggested the giant impact hypothesis, trying to piece together this mystery. After running into our planet, the outer rocky layers of both Earth and Theia were projected into a circle of cosmic matter. Out of this debris, what we now know as the moon was born. The Earth's core has apparently consumed Theia's iron core, that is, if it had any. Our planet also got into the position it occupies today. This way, it became more susceptible to geomagnetic storms. Back then, there was little to no information as to what might have happened to Theia, apart from giving us our only natural satellite. It took several years for a series of scientists to come up with an exciting new idea that revolutionized what we knew about our planet. What was left out of Theia is hiding under two continent-sized layers of rock deep within our planet. This theory is also one of the only explanations for why the moon is so dry and doesn't have much of an iron core. But why is geology so important when it comes to geomagnetic storms? Well, that's because recent data revealed that the type of rocks below your feet can affect how well your city adapts after powerful geomagnetic storms. Some types of rock, like sedimentary rocks, for example, generally have more space filled with water, which makes them electrically conductive. Other types of rocks are denser and have more resistance when it comes to electricity. Whenever such a storm happens, people living in the New England Highlands may have a higher risk of experiencing major disruptions. At the same time, those in the Mid-Atlantic coastal plain have less to worry about, simply due to what's hidden beneath their cities. How did we know how scary these storms are? Well, this wasn't the first time it happened. Solar storms have dazzled the astronomer community for many years now. The most iconic event of this magnitude was the Carrington event, which happened way back in September 1859. It gave us a sneak peek of what the power of the sun is, to say the least. They named it after an English astronomer, Richard Carrington, who witnessed the solar flares himself. The power of that solar storm was something humans had never experienced before. The strong geomagnetic storm caused northern lights as far down south as the territory of Hawaii. On the morning of September 1, 1859, Richard Carrington made his way into his private observatory, located outside of London. He opened the observatory dome to have a complete view of the sky and directed his telescope to the location of the sun. He saw a bunch of huge dark spots that gleamed on the surface of our star. Shortly enough, Carrington noticed two enigmatic areas, intensely bright and full of white light bursting out from the sunspots. They disappeared 5 minutes later, but the effects carried on all across the Earth's surface. At first, later in the night, telegraph communications all around the world started to malfunction. Flashes of light started to burst from telegraph machines, disturbing the operators and even setting papers on fire. Brightly colored auroras started to appear in the nighttime skies all over the world, making confused birds chirp at night. Some people even began their daily activities, since they mistakenly thought the day had already begun. These days, our planet is laced with a mega information web, so the impact of such a solar storm would be even messier. Back in the 1800s, the telegraph system was just starting out, but this Victorian internet was an important way of sending news and private messages. Even in the United States, telegraph operators had noticed local interruptions because of thunderstorms and northern lights before. But the Carrington event and its effects were something they had never seen before. A lot of telegraph lines in North America became useless. One telegraph manager based in Pittsburgh even recalled that the currents flowing through the wires were so strong, their platinum contacts were in danger of melting. Another example was that of a telegraph operator located in Washington, D.C., named Frederick W. Royce, who was hurt as his forehead touched a ground wire. Samples taken from the Earth's icy locations tell us that the Carrington effect was twice as big as any other solar storm experienced in the last 500 years. It's very difficult to imagine what the impact of a storm of that magnitude might be today. But based on a 2008 report drafted by the National Academy of Sciences, it might cost us between $1 trillion and $2 trillion in damages. There are things we can do individually to help reduce the amount of damage, though, like buying a generator or installing a backup energy supply. This can be either a solar panel or a wind turbine. More so, we can equip our houses with surge protectors that connect to our electrical panels and can save us from lightning and other power surges. The simplest solution of them all? Just unplug all the devices you're not using at any particular moment. If they aren't connected to a power source, they can't be affected by any surges.
In May 2024, stunning auroras adorning the night sky demonstrated all the power that solar storms emit as radiation. But sometimes, our sun does things that are far more destructive. I'm talking about solar particle events. During these events, blasts of protons coming directly from the surface of the sun can shoot out like giant cosmic searchlights. According to records, an extreme particle event hits Earth every 1,000 years or so. It often causes bad damage to the ozone layer and increases levels of ultraviolet radiation closer to the surface of our planet. Luckily, Earth's magnetic field acts as a powerful protective cocoon for our planet, fending off electrically charged radiation from the sun. In its normal state, this field functions like a ginormous bar magnet, with field lines rising from one pole, looping around the planet, and dropping at the other pole. This pattern is sometimes called an inverted grapefruit. This vertical orientation of the magnetic field at the poles allows some ionizing cosmic radiation to get through the field as far down as the upper atmosphere. There, it interacts with gas molecules and produces the glow we know as auroras. But over time, Earth's protective bubble changes. In the past century, the North Magnetic Pole moved across northern Canada at a speed of about 25 miles per year. Plus, it weakened by more than 6%. Even more shockingly, according to geological records, there have been periods of time as long as centuries and millennia when our planet's magnetic field was super weak or entirely absent. But we'll talk about those tragic times later. It's easy to imagine what our planet would look like without its protective bubble if you look at Mars. The red planet lost its global magnetic field long, long ago. And once this field disappeared, most of Mars's atmosphere vanished too. In May 2024, a strong solar particle event hit the planet. It disrupted the operation of the Mars Odyssey spacecraft and made radiation levels at the surface of the red planet rise around 30 times higher than what a person receives during a chest X-ray. The sun's outer atmosphere constantly emits a changing stream of electrons and protons, the solar wind. At the same time, the surface of the star also produces bursts of energy, mostly protons, during solar particle events. These bursts of energy have a connection to solar flares, extremely powerful bursts of electromagnetic radiation that can last from minutes to hours. Protons are way heavier than electrons and carry more energy. That's why they can reach lower levels of Earth's atmosphere, exciting gas molecules in the air. These excited molecules emit X-rays invisible to the unaided eye. Dozens and hundreds of relatively weak solar particle events happen during every solar cycle. Now, let's speak about solar cycles for a minute. You see, from a distance, the sun seems to be calm and steady. But if you zoom in, you'll see that its surface is constantly seething and churning. It keeps transforming from a uniform ocean of fire to a chaos of warped plasma and back again in repeating cycle. Every 11 years or so, the magnetic field of our star gets tangled up. Imagine a ball of tightly wound rubber bands. That's what it looks like at such moments. And then at one point, it snaps and flips completely, turning the North Pole into the South Pole and vice versa. Right before this event, the sun steps up its activity. It starts to spit out giant blobs of fiery plasma, emit powerful streams of radiation, and grow planet-sized spots. This period has the name of solar maxima. It's a rather dangerous time for Earth, since it gets regularly hit by solar storms. Such storms have the potential to disrupt communications and damage power infrastructure. Even worse, solar storms can harm astronauts working in space and even make satellites crash into the planet. As the cycle ends, it fades back to the solar minimum, and then a new cycle begins. Anyway, back to our solar particle events. Researchers have found traces of extremely strong solar events happening throughout the history of Earth. And some of them were thousands of times stronger than anything our modern instruments have ever recorded. Such extreme solar particle events happen approximately every few millennia. The most recent one occurred around 993 CE. Beyond the immediate effect they have, solar particle events can kickstart a chain of chemical reactions in the upper atmosphere. And these processes often lead to depletion of ozone, which isn't a good thing. Ozone absorbs harmful solar UV radiation, which can damage not only our eyesight, but also the DNA of living beings. Plus, changing the amounts of ozone in the atmosphere can impact the climate. In a recent study, researchers used large computer models to examine how extreme solar particle events affect Earth. They found out that if a solar proton event arrives during a period of time when our planet's magnetic field is very weak, Then, ozone damage can last for 6 years, and the level of UV radiation might increase by 25%, boosting solar-induced DNA damage by around 50%. And apparently, this dramatic combination of a weak magnetic field and extreme solar proton events happens quite often. And some researchers believe that it may even explain a few mysterious occurrences in the past of our planet. For example, the most recent period of weak magnetic field started 42,000 years ago and lasted for around 1,000 years. This period included a temporary switch in the North and South Poles. Several major evolutionary events happened during that time. For example, the last Neanderthals disappeared in Europe, along with the extinction of marsupial megafauna in Australia. Yeah, sadly, we won't see any giant wombats and giant kangaroos anymore. One more, even bigger evolutionary event might also be linked to Earth's geomagnetic field. Multicellular animals appeared at the end of the Ediacaran period, which started around 635 million years ago, and it occurred after a 26 million year period of extremely weak or even absent magnetic field. The rapid evolution of different groups of animals in the Cambrian explosion, about 539 million years ago, might have also been related to high UV levels and geomagnetism. The simultaneous evolution of hard body shells and eyes in multiple unrelated groups could have been necessary to detect and avoid harmful incoming UV rays. A complete reversal of Earth's geomagnetic poles might have a serious impact on the climate of our planet. Luckily, such flips don't happen overnight. The entire process stretches over thousands of years. Plus, even though the magnetic pole weakens during a pole reversal, it doesn't disappear completely. That's why the magnetosphere continues protecting the planet from cosmic rays and charged solar particles, even though there might be some amount of particulate radiation that will make it to Earth's surface. Our planet's magnetic fields are generated by moving electric charges. If some material allows these charges to easily move in it, it's called a conductor. Metal is a great conductor, and we often use it to transfer electric currents from one place to another. In this case, the electric current's negative charge, called electrons, move through the metal. The current is what generates a magnetic field. Earth's outer core is made of liquid iron and nickel. In other words, there are layers and layers of conducting material inside our planet. Currents of charges are constantly moving throughout the core, and the liquid metal is also moving and circulating there, generating the magnetic field. This magnetic field, in turn, produces something resembling a bubble around the planet. It's called the magnetosphere, and it's located above the uppermost part of the atmosphere. This layer shields and deflects high-energy cosmic ray radiation, which, otherwise, would be extremely hazardous to people and other forms of life on Earth. The magnetosphere also interacts with the ionosphere, the layer of our planet's atmosphere containing loads of ions and free electrons and capable of reflecting radio waves. The interaction between these two layers and magnetized solar winds is what scientists call space weather. The solar wind is normally mild, and there's no space weather whatsoever. Astronomers have discovered the most massive stellar black hole ever spotted in our home Milky Way galaxy. This newly found space monster is 33 times bigger than the Sun and sits 2,000 light-years away from us. Until recently, the largest stellar black hole found residing in our galaxy has been around 20 times as big as our star in terms of mass. As for the average stellar mass black hole, it's usually about 10 times as hefty as the Sun. Scientists from the European Southern Observatory's Gaia mission spotted the giant black hole after a star started to wobble while orbiting in that area. The black hole got the name of Gaia BH3. The proximity of this space object to Earth makes it the second closest black hole to our planet ever discovered. The nearest one is called Gaia BH1. It's hanging out around 1,560 light-years away from us. This uncomfortably close neighbor has a mass of about 9.6 times that of the Sun. It means that it's way smaller than the newly found black hole. Gaia BH3 is located in the Aguila constellation. From Earth, it seems to have the shape of an eagle, Interestingly, astronomers didn't expect to find a high-mass black hole lurking so relatively close to Earth and remaining undetected for so long. Okay, we can probably admit that this stellar black hole is just a small fry compared to supermassive black holes like the one that dominates the center of the Milky Way. I'm talking about Sagittarius A star. This space giant has a mass of 4.2 million times that of the Sun. While a stellar black hole forms when a star collapses, supermassive black giants have their own ways of seeing the light of day. They are usually the result of mergers of progressively larger and larger black holes. We'll talk about that later. First, let's speak a bit more about how stellar black holes form. When stars near the end of their lives, they typically inflate, lose a lot of mass, and cool to form what we know as white dwarfs. Such massive stellar black holes as Gaia BH3 are believed to form when a star doesn't contain heavy elements and loses not so much mass over its lifetime. Such stars are called metal poor. Afterward, instead of cooling into a white dwarf, this star collapses into a black hole. The companion of Gaia BH3 is a very metal poor star. It suggests that the star that collapsed and formed BH3 was metal poor too. Astronomers know of about 50 stellar black holes in the Milky Way. Some black holes are larger than others. You see, the universe is filled with black holes. Some of them are sprinkled randomly throughout galaxies. Others, those giants we know as supermassive black holes, sit at the center of galaxies. While stellar black holes are usually just a few times bigger than the Sun, such space monsters can weigh from a million to a billion solar masses. But even though they're so much heavier than our star, they're packed into a relatively small area. On a cosmic scale, of course, the size of our solar system or so. Some astronomers think supermassive black holes could form by several stars colliding and collapsing at once, while other experts state that such space objects might have started growing several billion years ago. At first, a small seed appears somewhere out there in space, which then gradually increases in mass to form a black hole. This seed does it through the process of accretion, which basically means gathering more and more matter around itself. Besides the absence of any precise information about the formation of black holes, there's also the black hole information paradox. If a black hole has some mass, and as we know, these spaced objects have a lot of it, then, according to the first law of thermodynamics, it should have a temperature. And according to the second law of thermodynamics, it should also radiate heat. Stephen Hawking showed that black holes are supposed to emit radiation too. These days, this kind of radiation is called Hawking radiation. It should form at the boundary of a black hole, but after proving it, Hawking pointed out a paradox. If a black hole is capable of evaporating, some of the information it contains can be lost forever. The problem is that the information contained in thermal radiation emitted by a black hole gets degraded. It doesn't repeat any information about the matter swallowed by a black hole before. Such an irreversible loss of information contradicts one of the basic principles of quantum mechanics. Physical systems that change over time cannot create or destroy information. It means we must be missing something. Both physicists and mathematicians have tried to come up with different ideas, but they ended with pretty weird results. Some have even claimed that the universe could be holographic. It means that the universe that we know and love is actually the result of some mysterious interactions at the infinitely distant boundary. I told you, black holes are really strange. At the same time, we have definitely found space objects that seem to have the properties of black holes. For example, look at this image of black hole M87 star. It certainly looks like a physical object, but what if black holes don't exist at all? There's an idea that black holes are actually gravistars, a blend of gravity, vacuum, and stars. This theory was first proposed in 2001 by Emil Matola and Pavel O. Mazur. They hypothesized that at one point during the collapse of a large star, intense gravity might transform its matter into a new state. It's similar to what occurs when atoms are cooled to such low energy states that they start acting like a single superatom. When we speak of gravistars, a star might collapse to the point of the event horizon, or the point of no return, and then its matter is transformed into a new state. It exerts enough outward pressure to prevent the star from collapsing into a physics-defying singularity. In gravistars, an ultra-thin, ultra-cold, and ultra-dark indestructible shell surrounds heavily wrapped space-time. This new form of matter turns out to be very durable, but it's also a bit flexible, like a bubble. So anything that's trapped by the intense gravity of a gravistar and smashed into it gets obliterated and then assimilated into the shell of this bizarre space structure. One of the benefits of the gravistar theory is getting away with those messy paradoxes connected with information and singularities. But even though this idea sounds kind of cool, it doesn't explain the phenomena we observe. And we've definitely observed something that looks like black holes. On the other hand, look at this shadow. It isn't caused by the trapping of light in the event horizon. It's a slightly different phenomenon known as the gravitational redshift. It makes light lose energy when it moves through a region with a powerful gravitational field. So, potentially, it could be a gravistar. When the light emitted from the regions close to the alternative objects reaches our telescopes, most of its energy is already lost to the gravitational field, which causes the appearance of this shadow. And still, like with black holes, things get complicated when you add rotation to the equation. Many experts are sure that gravistars would not be able to remain stable during rotation. But wait, it gets even more bizarre. There are suggestions that the insides of gravistars could contain a series of thicker shells. Those are known as nestars, something like a Matryoshka doll. Of course, these theories aren't perfect yet. Astronomers still have a lot of work trying to build functioning models. There's also a chance that both black holes and gravistars exist. But then, we've got another problem on our hands. How can we distinguish between the two? Some theories suggest that these different kinds of space objects should also emit very different gravitational radiation. It could allow us to figure out whether we're looking at a gravistar or a traditional black hole.
The sun's heat is beneath our feet. Scientists have figured out that Earth's core is actually as hot as the surface of the sun, around 10,800 degrees Fahrenheit. One of the reasons it's so incredibly hot down there is because Earth is still shedding heat from when it was created billions of years ago. Also, when an object as big as Mars slammed into the young Earth, it not only created the moon, according to one theory, but melted the surface of the planet. A lot of that extra heat is probably still stored inside the core. But there's no need to worry. The planet's core is harder for us to access than it is to probe the surface of Pluto. In fact, chances are we may never develop technology that could physically reach the core. There's no air on the moon. But then, how can it be rusting? Scientists have discovered the presence of hematite on the moon, and it's a kind of rust. A special NASA research instrument examined the light reflected off the moon's surface. It turned out that the composition of the satellite's poles was very different from the rest of it. The moon's surface is dotted with iron-rich rocks. But without oxygen and liquid water, rust can't appear. Solar winds add to the mystery. They bombard the moon with hydrogen, and hydrogen makes it much more difficult for hematite to form. Even though the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, it still has some trace amounts of oxygen. Its source is our planet's upper atmosphere. Earth also protects the moon from almost 100% of solar winds, although not all the time. And even though our natural satellite is bone dry, there might be water ice in the shadowed craters on its far side. A day on Uranus lasts 17 hours, 14 minutes, and 24 seconds. But get this, the planet has a tilt of around 98 degrees, and that makes a season on the gas giant last 21 Earth years. Mars has two moons, Phobos and Deimos. In the next 30 to 50 million years, Mars's gravitational forces will tear Phobos apart, and it will likely result in the formation of a ring around the planet. The Earth is the densest in the solar system. At the Earth's center, there's a core that takes up 15% of the planet's volume. It consists of two parts, the outer and the inner core. The inner core is a solid ball made of iron and nickel. Its radius is 760 miles, which makes 20% of the entire Earth's radius and 80% of the Moon's radius. The 1,500-mile-thick outer core is liquid. It also consists of iron and nickel, but it's not under enough pressure to be solid. Mars houses the biggest volcano in the solar system. While everything seems to be calm on Mars nowadays, in the past, some sort of force caused enormous volcanoes to form and erupt. One of these volcanoes is Olympus Mons. It's 16 miles tall, which is the height of three Mount Everests, and 374 miles across, making it about the size of Arizona. The volcano grew to such a gargantuan size because of the weak gravity on Mars and the lack of tectonic plate movement. Gravity is not the same everywhere. The rocks, metals, and other minerals and substances that make up the planet are packed into the ground more tightly in certain places than in others. This has surprising consequences. Gravity varies slightly depending on where you are. You weigh 0.5% less standing at the equator than you do at the poles. In most cases, that's a difference of less than 1 pound. How high up you are also has an effect. So if you were at the top of Mount Everest, you'd also weigh slightly less. Just don't look down. Earth's toughest living thing is so small, you can't see it. Water bears, also known as moss piglets, are cute little creatures with 8 legs and squashed-up heads that are less than 1/100 of an inch in length. Despite their microscopic stature, they can basically survive anywhere. They prefer bits of wet moss or the bottom of a lake, but they won't complain if you put them somewhere really uncomfortable. They can endure extreme cold and incredible heat, and survive both huge pressure and high radiation. Some of the little bears once even managed to survive unprotected in outer space for 10 days without a problem. That is tough. They handle all these things by rolling up into a ball and hibernating, which reduces their need for oxygen and food. The moon's gravity is about 17% of that on Earth. If you weighed 200 pounds on our home planet, on the moon, your weight would decrease to a mere 34 pounds. You would also be able to carry stuff 6 times heavier than what you can carry on Earth. It would also be easier to walk on the moon's surface, but it would be more dangerous too. Your feet, inside a heavy spacesuit, would sink into the lunar soil up to 6 inches deep. But let's imagine you decided to skip the tedious process of walking by leaping through the air. Then you'd likely lose control of your jumps in no time. Plus, the moon's surface is littered with deep craters. It would be a tough feat to avoid all of them. You can see solar eclipses because even though the moon is 400 times smaller than the sun, it's also 400 times closer to Earth. So it's perfectly capable of obscuring the star. But in 50 million years, I won't be around then. The moon won't be able to block the sun completely because of the satellite's changing orbit. A full NASA spacesuit costs an unbelievable $12 million. Yeah, I can believe that. 70% of this hefty sum is for the control module and backpack. At the very center of Uranus, there's a rocky core, small, just half the Earth's mass. Compared to other planets, Uranus's core is rather cool, 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit. An ice mantle surrounds the solid core, and that's the largest portion of the planet, about 80%. It's also not the ice you might be thinking about. It's a hot, dense fluid made up of water, ammonia, ice, and methane, sometimes referred to as a water-ammonia ocean. Uranus's atmosphere is mostly hydrogen and helium, but it has its blue-green color because of methane gas that absorbs the red light. The ocean on Jupiter is larger than any other in the solar system. But unlike Earth's oceans, it's made not of water, but of metallic hydrogen. The ocean's depth is a mind-blowing 25,000 miles. That's almost the same as the distance around Earth. Venus is a champ when it comes to volcanoes. The planet has about 1,600 major ones, but none of them is known to erupt. There's a supermassive black hole 250 million light-years away from us. It hums the deepest sound ever detected from any object in the universe. It's 57 octaves lower than the middle C on your piano. That's 1 quadrillion times deeper than what we can hear. Mercury is a few billion years old. In 2016, scientists discovered some abnormalities on the planet's surface, showing that it's getting smaller. After more research, they found out that Mercury hadn't finished cooling down yet. There are planets that aren't bound to any star orbit and aimlessly wander through outer space. Among the most spectacular-looking space objects are pulsars. Pulsars are a type of neutron star. They shoot out some of their material almost at the speed of light. Regular pulsars spin at a reasonable speed, between 1/10 to 60 times per second. But millisecond pulsars can spin at an impressive 700 times a second, which is way too fast for the human eye to even process. As they spin, they emit a beam of radiation from their axis that looks like the light from a lighthouse. Astronomers can notice pulsars when they face Earth, since it looks like a light being shined on our planet. When the light shines elsewhere, the pulsar can't be seen. Our Sun is insanely massive. Want some proof? 99.86% of all the mass in the solar system is the mass of the Sun, in particular, the hydrogen and helium it's made of. The remaining 0.14% is mostly the mass of the solar system's 8 planets. Saturn's rings are very thin compared to its size. If you had a scale model of the planet that was 3 feet wide, the rings would be 10,000 times thinner than a razor blade. Even though Venus is the hottest planet in our solar system, it still has snow. But not what you'd expect. It snows metals and rains acid. Not a great vacation spot.